I never excluded the possibility of arson, Casson told me shortly after the arrests. I gave the experts a written report at the very start, saying that evidence of arson should not be overlooked, but they kept telling me, negligence, negligence, negligence. From time to time, I'd ask, what about arson? And they'd answer, negligence. We met in Casson's office in the 15th century tribunal building at the foot of the Rialto Bridge. The building's interior had been partitioned haphazardly. Snaking hallways were lined with battered metal cabinets and stacks of legal documents, giving the place the ambience of a cluttered warehouse. Casson's office looked out on the Grand Canal, but it was drab and felt more like borrowed space than the central nervous system of a busy anti-crime division. When the experts decided it was arson after all, Casson went on, I had to review months' worth of interviews looking for clues. Did you find any bombshells? I asked. One of the first things I verified, said Casson, was Enrico Carella's statement that after he and his cousin had left the theater, they went to have a spritz next door at the bar del Teatro La Fenice, and then went to the Lido. This may sound foolish to you, but I wanted to know if it was true that they had had a spritz at the bar. So I went there and asked to talk to the bartender who had been on duty the night of the fire. It turned out the bar was closed that night. Casson allowed himself a modest smile. I immediately called in one of the other electricians who had confirmed the story about the bar, and I confronted him with the news that the bar had been closed. He backed down and admitted it was a lie. Then he told me that the day after the fire, Carella had tried to persuade all of the electricians to agree on a consistent story to tell the police. Carella had set up meetings to talk it over, once at a pizzeria near St. Mark's Square, and another time at his girlfriend's house on the Lido. He wanted them to say they had all left together at 7:30, an hour earlier than they really had. Casson paused to see if I understood the significance of the change in time. Only a person who set the fire, he said, would have known that leaving the building an hour before it burst into flame would have put him in the clear. When I looked carefully at their statements, I found that Carella and Marchetti had told conflicting stories. In separate interviews, they had both said they went up to the dressing room together, but each described taking a different route through the theater. The times they cited were frequently contradicted by the evidence. For example, Carella said he had arrived at his girlfriend's house at 9:15, but phone records show that she had called him at 9:21 when he was supposedly already there. Why would she have called him if he was with her? Could Carella merely have been mistaken about the time? I asked. Possibly, said Casson. But there are other time conflicts. For example, Carella said he learned about the fire from a friend who called him after hearing the news on television. We checked. The first mention of the fire was at 10:32 p.m. But at 10:29 p.m., Carella called the fire department, identified himself, and asked if it was true the Fenice was burning. At least 1 hour before that, he had called one of his workers and left a mysterious message asking if the man had left a blowtorch burning. The worker had not used a blowtorch all day.